Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, presented by the National Federation of the Blind, the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans. Live the life you want.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I'm Melissa Riccobono, and as often, or almost always, I'm here with my co-host.
It's Anil Lewis, and I'm glad to be here as your co-host.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. How are you, Anil? How's Atlanta?
I'm doing quite well. Atlanta's great. I'm in Baltimore today, though. Time my home away from home.
Well, how's Baltimore? I haven't even been outside yet.
Neither have I. Luckily, we have residential facilities here at our National Center, so I don't have to worry about the Baltimore weather. But I'm pretty sure it's pretty nice. I think it's supposed to be in what, I-40s, low 50s. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not bad. Oh, that's great.
Not bad at all.
Can't wait to spring.
We're going to take a new swing at this thing. We're doing something different with the podcast.
We are. So it's kind of like spring of the podcast. So why don't you talk, Anil, about what is it that we're doing new today?
Well, I love that our comms team is always trying to innovate new ways of making the podcast more interesting to our listeners. And I've really been impressed with the amount of feedback we've been getting from our listeners as of late. So keep it coming, and you guys can help us continue to grow and evolve. But we want to start doing some of the podcasts where we can talk about some of the contemporary news issues that are going around impacting blind people, because, well, we know in this current environment, news is everywhere and everything. So let's take our little slice of it and make sure that our listeners are aware that we're informed. And I think it's important to recognize that we as an organization state that it's not our blindness that creates the biggest barriers, the attitude that society has around blindness. And the biggest problem we have about attitudes being formed is the way that we're portrayed in media. So I'm loving the topics today, because we're going to be talking about specifically a radio kind of talk show called The Breakfast Club, which in the past they did this story about blind people and babysitting. And of course, they made it sound like blind people were incapable of babysitting. What do you think about that, Melissa?
Well, it was news to me, because when my sister was growing up, my sister's also blind, she babysat all the time.
What? As a blind person?
Yes. Oh. And the neighbor down the street had five kids, three of them very active, very rowdy boys. And she said my sister was the best babysitter she ever had, because she'd come home and my sister would be on the floor wrestling with the boys, and they ate their spinach. They were strong little kids. Lovely. And they weren't mean. They just liked to wrestle. They had lots of energy. And at one point, the neighbor said, "Wow, of all the things, like, that's really nice of you to play with them that way." And my sister said, "Well, I knew right where they were.
Nice.
You know, if they're wrestling with me, they're not getting in trouble."
Nice. Very nice.
And she used to bring games for kids to play with. And of course, who doesn't like games that aren't theirs and games that have Braille? And she would bring print Braille books to read. And so I really grew up sort of watching her do all these things and then followed in her footsteps. And I remember my senior year of high school being asked to babysit for a baby. He was probably 6 or 7 months old.
Nice.
A few times for one of my teachers. And I just think, wow, like, what trust? I mean, it's one thing to have you be a 4, 5, or 6 year old, mm-hmm. But to really, and it was her first child, but she trusted me. She knew that I could do it as a blind person. And now our daughter Oriana babysits all the time, and that's her happy place. And that is where I see her acting so grown up and so responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a kid that really struggles in a lot of ways with executive functioning for herself. But if she's in charge of somebody else's kid, it's like this whole new thing turns on. And I just get a glimpse of what she's going to be like when she's a grown up. And of course, she's learning. I'm not saying she's perfect.
Sure.
But when she's with other people's kids, it's really quite something to see. And so, yes, blind people can absolutely babysit. And if people don't even think blind people can babysit, then how would they think blind people can parent? And that just makes me very angry.
That's the crossover. So two things you say are very important. One, the trust factor. As a parent, of course, I know that trust is there. But then the other piece is they had a relationship with your sister. The people you're babysitting for knew you.
Yep.
The people that Ariana's baby, it's a matter of getting to know and interact with blind people. So yes. You can really recognize that we have the capacity. And in a lot of instances, you know, we're going to do things differently, but sometimes the different way we do things is actually better.
Yes.
But people continue to make assumptions based on their ignorance, right? And their lack of exposure or seeing someone who is successful and independent as a blind person do things. And then they perpetuate when they have the vehicle to talk to millions of people through their media platforms, that ignorance to everybody else. I mean, don't speak on things that you haven't learned about or experienced yourself, because you may not recognize the harm that you're creating for people through that. And I get the jokes, you know, that's fine. And I know we should learn to laugh at ourselves, but not to the point where it prohibits us from living the lives that we want or creating, you know, barriers to us having those opportunities that everybody else has.
And here's the deal about particularly the babysitting story. Sean Calloway, who's our president of the National Federation of the Blind of DC, he's a Breakfast Club listener, or he was. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he still listens, but he wrote them a letter and basically said, hey, I'm a blind dad. This is really hurtful to me. And I believe he's actually been a radio host. He does radio. And so he said, I'd love to come and set the record straight. I'd love to come and answer some of your questions about how it is that blind people can babysit, blind people can parent, and they never responded to him. And to me, that's a huge missed opportunity.
Agreed.
And it wasn't even, I know Sean, I can't imagine he was mean or disrespectful to them. I just feel like he was probably just giving them a really good show idea from a listener. And they didn't even have the wherewithal to respond in any way, a yes or a no. They just ignored it.
And not only that, not only did they not respond to this opportunity to try to educate them around the capacity of blind people, they had the audacity to go ahead and make the same mistake in this recent news story. So I think that we're going to play the clip from The Breakfast Club, and then we're going to have a special guest to really talk intelligently about this particular issue.
Sounds great.
Donkey of the Day for Monday, February 10th goes to the folks who work at the City County Building in Indianapolis. Now, there is a man named Terry Sutherland, okay, who decided to perform a social experiment in Indianapolis. And the social experiment was to highlight the need for common sense gun laws in America. Drop on the clues bombs for Terry Sutherland. I love a great social experiment, okay? I love a great social experiment. And I am 2A all day, but I also understand the need for common sense gun laws. So Terry wanted to prove a point. And the point is that anyone can get a firearm in America. And when you hear more of the story, you will see that his point was proven. Let's go to ABC 10 for the report, please.
Tonight, we're looking into a story getting some buzz. It claims a blind man was issued a concealed carry gun permit in Indiana. And it's true. Terry Sutherland was using his white cane when he came to the City County Building in Indianapolis to get fingerprinted for the permit. He says he also spoke with several people who knew he was blind. But despite that, he was still issued a concealed carry permit without an issue. Sutherland has no intention of using a gun. He says he went through the process to highlight the need for common sense gun laws. He says he sent letters to state lawmakers, and he has not yet heard back.
Round of applause for that, man. Round of applause to Terry Sutherland. Now, I know that a lot of people have a lot of negative stereotypes in regards to blind people. I say often that a lot of blind people can actually see better than those of us who have eyes. Okay, I mean, we are at the point in our lives that we don't even believe if Stevie Wonder is really blind. Okay, but let me be the first to tell you, he is. And there is also a reason that Daredevil doesn't use guns. Y'all know who Daredevil is, right? Matt Murdock, okay, blind superhero, new series, Daredevil Born Again, starting on Disney Plus March 4th. This man once said in the comic books he doesn't use guns because of the carnage that he could unleash on people. Yes, Daredevil, because you're blind, okay? I believe blind people can do a lot of things in this country, but owning a gun and driving a car, probably not good ideas. Do we know blind people that drive cars?
Do they?
I never thought
about how they get anywhere.
You think they ride the dog? Huh?
I just never thought about it.
Jesus Christ.
Listen, Terry has the right to bear a cane, but not arms, okay? And if he does have a CNI dog, that CNI dog better be trained like John Wick's. Because if you're shooting at everything the dog barks at, my God.
Oh, my okay?
My God. All right? Blind people carrying guns is like blind people driving an Uber. Would you get into an Uber with a blind person?
No.
Okay. All right. Now, Terry said he spoke to several people. You heard the news report who knew he was blind. He came in with a white cane. But despite that, he was still issued a concealed carry permit without an issue. Listen, man, the reason you will never get common sense gun laws in America is simple. Because nobody has common sense in America anymore, okay? And this story proves it. Some donkey of the days just sell themselves. Please give the city county building in Indianapolis the biggest hee-haw. He said he wrote them a letter and they, He said he wrote them a letter and he hasn't heard back.
Yeah. Maybe. He wrote the letter, like...
What if they sent the letter? You just don't know he got...
They probably responded.
That's all I will say.
Y'all need to call, homie, though.
Because he said he didn't hear back. I'm like, damn, you said you were blind, not deaf. You might have got the letter back, my brother. Okay. What is this?
Is that Braille?
What is this, Mac?
What does it say? What does it say?
It said it's not a guy right. Cut it out.
See, I was going to ask, but I didn't want to be foul. Like, because how he know how to stay online and how to be straight? Because he writing.
Let's stop.
Close your eyes and try to write a sentence. I bet you can't do it straight. I guarantee you can't do it straight.
Yes, I can.
Close your eyes.
They have heightened senses, guys. All right, I'm lying. How do black people write letters? I just want to know.
Look what I wrote.
Because I thought they used Braille to write letters.
By me, you seen it?
You sound so stupid.
No, I don't know.
They do use Braille. That's why I asked, was it Braille?
Braille to read.
No, to write letters, too.
We probably sound so... I'm sorry.
Yes. All the blind listeners, I apologize.
And did you ask me, could they drive earlier? Did I answer that?
He did ask.
Why would I answer that?
I don't know why you answered that.
Well, it's okay to be stupid on this topic. I'll be dumb. Somebody be deaf and y'all be blind. And then we'll figure it all out.
We'll figure it out. Okay? Jesus.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
That's a lot to unpack Neil.
Yeah, and I think we're going to need some help, especially on this whole, you know, gun thing. So,
yeah.
Luckily, we have an individual who's blind that actually is a licensed gun owner. Welcome, Jim. You want to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Jim Marks. I am the president of the National Federation of the Blind in Montana, and I am a member of the National Board of Directors. I've been a Federationist for a long time. I am blind. I use a cane. I read Braille, although I need to get better at it. And I use all the tools and tricks of blindness. You know, listening to that clip, it makes me feel like there's a huge weight pushing me down because the low expectations are just overwhelming. Because there's no reason that a blind person cannot use firearms safely, because I do. And I've also been a hunter's ed instructor in Montana for over 20 years. And so, like, I actually teach people how to use firearms.
Clarify, hunter's ed, you actually taught other people, and this is sighted people?
Yes.
First of all, let me point out to the Breakfast Club, we're exercising best practice. So we have a topic and we're bringing in someone who actually has expertise and lived experience in that area so that we're not perpetuating our ignorance onto our listeners. So go right ahead, Jim.
Well, I'm a lifelong Montanan and our culture here is one where guns are everywhere. It's not, you know, like other parts of the country. And it's not gun nuts who own and use the guns all the time. I don't consider myself to be like, you know, some sort of radical right person in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. But I grew up with firearms. And because I was a, you know, son of a Montana rancher, and pretty much every Montana pickup truck, even today, you'll find a firearm in the vehicle. Mm. And they were just tools that we had around and used. And I knew how to use firearms pretty well. I became legally blind at age 25, and blindness didn't stop my use of firearms at all. So today, I'm not sure how many guns I actually own. I believe it's around 10 right now. I gave away quite a few to, you know, relatives, my son, mm-hmm. and to my daughters and to grandchildren and stuff like that. My guns are in a gun safe, stored carefully. I do not carry concealed in Montana. We do have concealed weapons permits that you have to apply and get for, like Mr. Sutherland did in Indiana. But Montana opened up its rules, and now you can carry a gun pretty much anywhere you want in Montana. There's nothing that prevents you from doing that. I don't do it because I don't feel the need to do it. Like, and I don't want to shoot anybody. You know, I don't want to shoot another human being. And so, like, there's just no need to carry a gun in my life. But I do when I go hunting or I'm out in the backcountry. And a lot of it is because, you know, Montana has all the great predators, you know, the bears, the mountain lions. Mm-hmm. And generally, I would first reach for my pepper spray because I don't really want to hurt the animal. And because pepper spray is actually a lot more effective than a firearm. Mm. But I do have a firearm as a backup in case I need it.
Yeah, I hear that bear spray is pretty potent, and it has the range on it that's like ridiculous. But I think that what you just expressed really demonstrates really the crux of it, right? Because you've made an individual choice on owning a gun, and you have a different perspective than some others may have around the utility of the firearm, et cetera. But when you rob someone of the right to actually become a licensed gun owner, then you prevent them from making that choice, like everyone else has that ability to make the choice. And one thing, and I'll pitch it to you, Melissa, is, you know, they kept on saying common sense gun laws. I mean, I don't think the country's at a place where we're at common sense gun laws, because it's such an interesting topic overall. Just like with anything else, the lack of sight doesn't prohibit someone from being responsible in the utility of any device, whether it be a gun or whether it be power tools or whether it be the capacity and ability to babysit. You know, these things are important in a way to make sure that we can be fully integrated into society. I mean, it's important for society to understand that we have the capacity to do these things so that we can be fully participating citizens. What do you think about all of this, Melissa?
So I completely agree with you, Anil. To me, I don't, you know, Jim, it's so interesting. And that's why I love having different people on, because, of course, you grew up in Montana, where guns were just a part of the culture. I grew up in Wisconsin, where they were part of the culture, deer hunting especially, but they weren't really part of my family culture. My family weren't hunters. And so I grew up just not really thinking much about guns one way or the other. For myself, I don't think I'd personally ever want to own a gun. I might want to shoot one at some point at a range. That might be very interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's my choice. Just like Jim, you have made the choice, and a very responsible choice, and you're doing all the right things. You have your guns in a gun safe. They're secure. When you're out on a hike, yes, it makes total sense to me that if you're going to be possibly faced with a bear or a mountain lion, you're going to want something to protect yourself. And of course, if you enjoy hunting, and I'd love to get into that a little bit in a minute, how you go and hunt as a blind person and hit what you're aiming for and that type of thing, that's a right that you should have. And so I feel like there's so many reasons why, if this blind man wanted a gun in Indiana and wanted concealed carry, no one says it has to be loaded, right? If somebody feels like they want concealed carry and they want to carry that gun in a responsible way and they feel like they need to for protection, as long as it's legal for everybody else, who am I to say, no, you can't do it just because you're blind? I don't think that's right. Yeah. And I think it's sad that this guy was really trying to make a point and is a blind guy that's saying, oh my gosh, there's no way I should be. I'm blind.
Yeah.
There's no way I should be allowed to have a gun. That kind of makes me sad that he sort of has fallen into, I don't know, those low expectations and just, yes, you know, how could I ever, or why would they ever give me a gun, and sort of use that as his agenda then to further, you know, this is why the laws are backward and blah, 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 blah. But let me just go back for just a second, because...
Well before, let's finish that particular point, though. I mean, it's a reflection of the fact that he has had low expectations, right, superimposed onto him. I mean,
yeah,
he goes in thinking, sure, blind people shouldn't have a gun. That's reflective on the fact that he hasn't seen, mm-hmm, people like Jim or John Fritz or some of the others that we know that are, you know, responsible gun owners that are actually actively hunting.
Yeah.
So he is a victim of what we're trying to discuss here. As long as the media continues to perpetuate that blind people don't have the capacity to do certain things, even blind people are going to start believing that they don't have the capacity.
Well, and that's exactly right. And here's what I wanted to say about, I mean, the story just went, it started and then it just kind of went downhill.
Yeah.
Well, how do blind people write a letter? Well, he said he wrote a letter. How do they write? I mean, how is, yeah, he going to write straight? Oh, well, maybe he doesn't know that he got a letter.
Opportunities for education right there.
I mean, whoa. Guys, there's things called computers and blind people can use them. And I mean, and again, that's just, they really were showing their ignorance, and that's really too bad. And we asked Sean Calloway about this. You know, he's the one that wrote to them originally with the babysitting. And he said, you know, they claim on the Breakfast Club that they really stand up for marginalized people, but it seems like at every turn they put down or don't stand up for disabled, marginalized people. Sure. So anyway.
And then they mix it all up to the point where, and I know it's entertainment, right? So when they went down that path of, you know, Daredevil, really? Yeah. Daredevil is a fictional superhero character. I mean, right. Why doesn't Superman use a gun?
Right.
You know, don't mix it up to be entertaining, then be entertaining.
Yes.
But don't try to mix a real message in with the nonsense because it just confuses everybody.
Right. And had they said, I don't want a blind person shooting in a public place.
That's their opinion.
That's their opinion. But the way that they presented it was just, you know, there's no way. There's no way we can. It's just common sense. It's just common sense. There's no way this should ever happen. And cheers to this guy who's blind.
Yeah.
Who just proved this horrible point. So.
Yeah. And one last thing, and then I'll go back to topic.
Actually, one last thing, and then I think we should pause for an ad. And then I think we should get back to Jim, because that's who people really want to hear from.
Yeah. I just had to vent. So this is this one last little piece and this exemplary of the mistake that everybody makes. At one point, they were saying something about writing. They say, close your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you guys to know, close your eyes means that's what it may be like to go blind, but it's not what it's like to be blind. All the stuff they were talking about, Braille, writing, sending email, whatever, those things require training just like everybody else. You don't come out of the womb with the skill set, right? So you can't just say, close your eyes and this is what it must be like to be blind. No. The blindness experience is real, and we learn alternative skills to make sure that we can read, write, send emails, and yes, even responsibly carry and use firearms.
Absolutely.
So yeah, let's go to an ad.
Registration is now open for our 2025 National Federation of the Blind National Convention from July 8th to July 13th at New Orleans, Louisiana. Our national convention is the largest gathering of blind people in the world. It is the premier event for training, support, and information for the blind community. The national convention offers hundreds of sessions, dynamic presentations, and countless opportunities, as well as a chance for members to participate in decision-making in organizational policy. Register today at nfb.org/convention.
All right, well, we are back. So thank you for letting me vent, Anil. I feel much better.
It's mutual.
Yes. And Jim, you know, maybe you want to vent too, but I'm really curious. You said you're a hunter and you said that you continued to use firearms even after you lost your sight. And you also instruct on being safe and on hunting. I'd love to hear the alternative techniques that you use. And I was really interested in something that's in our little outline here. Spoiler alert, we do have a little outline that our wonderful producer DW puts together for us. So we sound at least partly, you know, educated about these things. But in this outline, she said that you often find that you are able to pick up on things that your hunting buddies miss because they're not using some of their other senses. And I mean, I think with everything, when you're blind, there are things I picked up on with my kids that I didn't need to see. There were things that I pick up on in a grocery store or whatever it is that people just don't pick up on because they're so busy using their eyes, which aren't their best sense all the time. So I just love to hear some of your experiences, your stories, your techniques.
That sounds great. Just in terms of venting a little bit, to my way of thinking, gun rights are civil rights. You know, it's about the
Amen.
Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
Yes.
And I will never be convinced that blind people should be categorically excluded from civil rights.
I completely agree.
It's wrong.
Especially because he doesn't have a criminal record. You know, none of those red flags. And I believe in red flag laws, by the way. But if he doesn't have any of those red flags, then there you go. And that's all I'll say about that, unless you want to say more, Jim.
That's good. So the way that I shoot is with a spotter. So a sighted person who helps guide my fire. And I have two main different ways of doing it. I have I sometimes use a pistol, and there's no adaptation to the pistol. I prefer revolvers, and I shoot a caliber called a 44 Magnum that is, you know, strong and fast enough that it, you know, it's designed to take down animals. You don't ever see 44 Magnums used anywhere but like in the Dirty Harry movies by law enforcement, because you know, you fire a 44 Magnum and it might pass through two houses before the bullet stops, kind of thing. So it's not something that you want to use for like home defense or anything, unless you download the ammunition or something. So what happens is that it takes a lot of practice with both methods. So like with the pistol, I basically brace up and it's about making sure it's about the kinesthetic control of the firearm. And I'm not target focused. That's the kind of the point of my spotter. My job is to really hold the firearm still and well. And when I fire, I want to be able to recover from the recoil and be able to fire a second shot without like pulling the muzzle away from its former position. And so like with the pistol that I use for hunting is a Smith & Wesson 44 Mag with a 8 3/8 inch barrel, which is really a long barrel. And at 100 yards, I can shoot about a 6-inch group, which is very good. There are a few handgun shooters that can do as well as that. And it takes a lot of practice. And so my spotter and I just will do an awful lot of practice shooting.
Just for clarity, so the spotter, like once you get that first shot, they'll tell you where you are in relation to the target so you can adjust?
Yes. So okay. They're not touching the firearm in any way, shape, or form. I'm holding the gun. They're standing behind me and they're sighting down, just like we call them iron sights, but just the regular sights that come on the Smith & Wesson revolvers. You know, they just help me. They'll tell me up, down, left, or right.
Nice.
And then shoot. If we're in a place like if we're actually hunting, they might put their hand on my back and move their hand up, but they want me to lift the barrel, drop it, you know, and use like a hand signal so that you don't, you know, draw attention from your prey. Mm-hmm. But mostly it's done quietly and verbally. The second method is with what's called a scope camera. It basically is a camera and display device that looks through the scope of a rifle, and my spotter can see on the display. It's, you know, like the displays are usually about the size of a cell phone. A lot of times they are cell phones, so that, you know, they can see the crosshairs and everything and guide me the same way. Hmm. And it's essentially the same thing. And with a rifle, I can easily shoot 300 yards very safely and well.
Wow. There you go, Melissa. See, now you can go to a range and have that experience.
I could. And I mean, I love what you said, Jim, about practice. You know, this is not something. And again, you grew up with this, too. So you had a mm-hmm. lot of that practice. But there's no reason if a blind kid is interested in hunting like the rest of their family, that they can't go out and have that practice and start. I mean, I'm sure you didn't start with, I don't know how hunting works, but I'm guessing you work up to it kind of gradually as you get stronger and bigger, because I would guess that, you know, guns are powerful things and you're talking about the recoil. I can't even quite imagine what that feels like, but it's a skill and you've developed alternative techniques over years and you've practiced your skill and I'm guessing you're successful. Do you go hunting each year?
Almost every year I do. There were a couple of years that I did not, just because I was, you know, working and doing other things at the time. But pretty much I do hunt every year.
Are you successful pretty much every time?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Look, I love it. Oh, why, of course.
Yeah. What have you shot? Well, and did you keep any of the pelts or any of the antlers or any of the, you know, what? And do you eat the meat? You know, all these questions.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I usually hunt for is elk.
Okay.
And elk meat is really, really good. You know, it's very lean. Mm-hmm. It's very healthy. The animals are just gorgeous. And, you know, part of hunting is it's like the guns is actually part is a very small part. When you hunt, you get to know your environment. You get to know the animals. And like for me, hunting is like a total immersion in environmentalism. So you mentioned earlier, like, what is my contribution to the hunting party? And I don't hear better. I don't smell better.
Yeah, thanks for correcting that. It's not heightened senses. It's just being able to use them better.
All right.
Exactly.
Or differently.
I listen.
Yeah.
And I pay attention. And as a result of that, oftentimes I see the game before my sighted hunting partners do. Mm-hmm. Because I'm paying attention to like what's going on all around me, and animals will give you clues you know, about where they are and what's going on. And a lot of times people get so focused on sight that they forget to listen, but I don't. I pay attention. So there've been many a time when my hunting party was successful because I was part of the party. Yeah. And then the other part of it too, and this, it's kind of a joke. I'm a big guy. And if you're going to drag an animal out of the backcountry, I'm a really good friend to have. So.
I'll remember that, Jim.
Yeah. Very nice. I'm curious. So you said you actually used to teach. Mm-hmm. And you were actually teaching sight of people. What were some of the reactions? Were they comfortable with you from the beginning? Did you have to use some strategy to get them comfortable with you being an instructor? What were some of those experiences?
That's a brilliant question, Anil, because I wrote a Braille Monitor article called "Hey Mom, the Hunter Ed Guy is Blind." And one of the things that I would say is that if I were holding a high-powered hunting rifle in one hand and a white cane in the other, the white cane disappears. Everybody, all the kids, all the students are paying attention to that rifle. That's what they're there for. And so, like, really, my blindness didn't matter at all, really. Yeah. It was all about making sure that we were conveying the approved curriculum and that, you know, we were making sure that we were connecting with our students and really helping them understand all the rights and responsibilities that go with hunting. So
how old were these students? What grade was this?
They're 12-year-olds. And what is that? It's like seventh grade?
Sixth, seventh grade. And I love that because, I mean, at that age, you can really educate them to a way where we become part of their natural environment, right? And it's nothing outrageous. It's almost just fun and interesting. So good for you in doing that. And maybe we can, you know, get some of the Breakfast Club guys to go to that seventh grade class and take a class.
Yeah, that'd be good. And I mean, that's such a good point, too, because you weren't teaching them how to shoot. Right. That was somebody else's job. You were talking more about the safety, the responsibility, how to take care of your gun. Right. Is that was kind of more your curriculum? Is that.
Actually, no, I would. We would do live fire exercises as part of our class.
Wow. So how do they work? That's awesome.
Well, you know, basically I would sit beside, you know, a student who's, we would use 22 rifles, which are, you know, pretty quiet and have no real recoil.
That's what we grew up with back in my grandma's house. Yeah.
And my job is just to be right there with the kids and making sure that they're understanding what they're supposed to do, you know, where they hand placement and where they put their cheek and all that kind of stuff. So I'm coaching them. Right. And then someone else is spotting where they're shooting.
Got it.
And there's usually like a fire pit boss who basically, you know, acts like a master sergeant, drill sergeant, you know, bellowing fire, cease fire, you know, kind of thing. So it's a group effort. It takes a whole village to do Hunter's Ed.
Yeah. Fascinating.
And, you know, making sure that they lock to put the safety on afterward or whatever, however it is that, I mean, I'm sure you went through all of it, loading, unloading.
Yeah, we would have them, besides just the safety, we would actually have them open the actions so that you were sure that firearm was safe to lay down and was not going to misfire.
Nice. Wow. Open the actions. So that's new. That's new to me. So like where the bullets go, I'm guessing that's the actions.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Firearms are coming with different mechanisms. Like there's bolt actions and lever actions and. Wow. Semi-automatics and revolvers. And
I think you're getting it, Jim. I think Melissa's going to be ready. She, that curiosity.
No,
that curiosity,
I just am like, I'm just drowning in all I don't know. I really know very little about any of this.
She's going to head out and she's going to learn. Next time you talk to her, she's going to be talking to you all about all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
I don't know about that, but you know, I do think it would be an interesting thing to have experience with. And I do, I know a guy who was in the Marines. So, you know, maybe he and I at some point, I don't know if he likes to shoot, but you know, maybe he and I go somewhere and I, you know, check out, cause I don't even know when you're saying revolver and 22 and 44 mag and rifle, I kind of know what those are, but being blind all my life, I've never had a chance to feel a bunch of different guns even, and kind of knowing what those are. So that would be interesting in and of itself. So
you mean rather than sitting around talking about something you know anything about, you're going to go and do some more investigation and learn more?
I would, actually. Yes.
Yeah, that's a really good strategy.
I'd kind of like to do that. Maybe, I've never been in Montana. Maybe I come out and you show me your 10 guns or whatever. I mean, by the way, that just it floored me a little bit when you said, I don't even really know how many I have. I think I have 10. I gave some away, but again, that's your culture. And that's great. It makes you happy. It is part of how you live the life you want. And that's exactly the most important thing to me. It might not be the life that I want or that I would choose.
That's right. You play Monopoly and let Jim go.
That's right. I watch Gilligan's Island and I play Monopoly and I sing and I edit audio and I host the podcast.
You mean blind people can play Monopoly? I'm sorry.
How do you know what property you got, yo?
I do have to. Wow. I do. I'll give the Breakfast Club this much credit. As they evolved in their discussion around this, I think that they reached near the end in understanding that we don't know what we're talking about. So there was a perfunctory apology. I'm sorry, blind people. I don't think it was really legitimately to the whole topic, but it was interesting watching, them evolve to a space where they realize, oh, you know what? We don't know what we're talking about.
Maybe we really don't know what. Yeah. Yes. And hopefully maybe we'll send them this podcast and, will it make a difference? We'll don't know, but we can at least make a difference in our corner of the world. So that's right.
Well, and doesn't it make it kind of sad, too, when you hear about a blind person who harbors all those low expectations and then, sets out to prove it? It's like my heart goes out to Mr. Sutherland because I just want to put my arm around his shoulder and say, man, let me show you how it actually is.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I want to say to him.
And if it's really his desire because he is just, an anti-gun person, which, again, he has that right to do, then that's fine. But don't do it in a manner that prohibits someone else who would like to make a different choice from being able to legally do so.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Well, I know that we have another thing to talk about, Anil, believe it or not. Jim, do you have anything else? Or Anil, do you have anything else that we should talk to Jim about before we let him go on his merry hunting way?
No, nothing at all right now. I'm sure you'll be following up with him, to see when you can schedule a class. And maybe you'll be in the same class with the Breakfast Club. Maybe
when you come out, Jim, we go do something. I don't know. I would at least like to feel the different guns for sure. I would be very interested in that. I think that'd be very interesting. And I think I would like to shoot at least once just so I kind of know how that feels. And then I think I'll be good. But maybe I won't. Maybe I'll love it. So
yeah, you might become a gun enthusiast. Yeah. And the next thing you know, Melissa will be like, I don't know how many guns I have. I gave some to some of my family and friends.
They will always be locked up, believe me. Yes. No doubt about that one.
Exactly. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
If you guys come out, I'll have you shooting often, safely, and well.
Nice. Awesome. Often, safely, and well. I love that. And I would love to try some elk meat as well. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's I'll all in the way it's cooked. So I'm glad that Jim knows what he's talking about. So yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a lot,
Thank you so much, Jim. Always love talking to you.
See you guys.
All right, take care.
Jim Marks, man, that was the guy that called me when I won my NFB scholarship way back in 2000. And
he's a great guy.
Great guy. Always like talking to him.
He was talking about his size. His little tag name is the Blind Grizzly. Big guy, lovable guy. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Man, this next topic seems a little anticlimactic.
It is, but that's okay. This is about Audible and the speed at which people decide to read. So let's take a listen to this.
The best listening speed for an audiobook is at the speed at which it was recorded.
One?
Regular speed is good for me.
I like a normal 1x listening speed. My heart rate literally spikes. I'm like, I want to hear people talk at a normal human rate.
I would only ever listen to an audiobook at the natural speed of one, as it were.
One. Regular speed.
Regular speed.
Normal.
I think people who go real fast are, I don't want to say psychopath, but it's giving that.
1.5 is good for boring stuff. Stuff where you're just like, give me the facts, give them fast. But I think you want to slow down for the good stuff.
I start at one, but then once I am in the story, then I flip it up.
You can round up to two, but it's really, you need 1.8.
which is, I think, is what Goldilocks also likes.
I don't know why you're speeding it up, but you need to look inward. I need to drink less iced coffee.
Wow. Okay, so lots of different opinions.
I would only listen to it on the regular speed.
I need to speed you up, buddy.
You know, O'Neill, that's actually very funny, and I'm going to tell this story very quickly, but my husband and I have a joke about this type of thing, because he claims that people that talk fast often listen to Jaws fast, and mm-hmm. that people that talk slower often listen to Jaws slower. And, you know, it's not a scientific experiment, but whenever I find that one or the other is true, it does always make me smile. So, again, what speed do you listen to an audiobook at?
It depends on what I'm listening mm-hmm. to. So first of all, I love the fact that Audible and all these other services are making listening to books kind of mainstream, right? Because as a blind person, when I went blind in 89, it was so hard to find content, and you had to get readers to read stuff for you. And now, you know, so to all of the sighted people out there, you're welcome.
Yes.
Welcome to our world. We're glad you're able to enjoy audio content. So you're welcome.
You are absolutely welcome. And we're glad that you understand now, too, when Audible first started, so much of the content was abridged. And that was back mm-hmm. in the stores, too. Walden Books, Barnes & Noble. Wow. Remember those? You could buy audiobooks, but many times those were abridged. And now all of a sudden,
in the full
people
story.
Don't want abridged content. They want the whole gosh darn thing. And that's really what Audible has done, aside from the National Library Service, which, of course, did it first. But anyway,
So, I listen, depending. I love when I listen to books that are being read by the authors. You know, like when I read Barack Obama's book, I read it at normal speed because I just wanted to seem like Barack Obama was talking to me. You know, some of the other books I read, if I'm reading a David Baldacci book, I bump it up a little bit, maybe at least 1.25 or something, because that whole thriller element of it, the speed of the reading also helps kind of add to that mm-hmm. feeling. If I'm reading something to get information that is very voluminous, I may crank the speed up even faster just so I can ingest that information until it gets to the point where I really want to drill down and really focus on the content that's being provided. Then I'll slow it down. So I love the fact that it's variable. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I mean, so two things. Not only thank you to blind people for audiobooks in general, thank you to blind people for figuring out a way, or whoever figured it out, but I think it was figured out mostly for blind people, at least at first, because when I was a kid, if you wanted to listen to anything faster than it was supposed to be listened to, it sounded like chipmunks.
Yeah, because you only could go from 33 and a third to whatever, you know, you could only flip that switch.
And I could do it. But it really wasn't that pleasant of a listening experience. And then I remember my sister getting an APH Handy cassette. And the big thing about the APH Handy cassette was you could go. It had that
speed.
Slider. You know exactly. It had the slider, and it had a pitch slider. And it was a little, I mean, it didn't sound wonderful. It kind of sounded like they were underwater. But at least you could hear it, and it was at a good pitch, and so you could listen really, really fast. And in college for textbooks, I did a lot of what you're talking about, Anil, where I would, you know, listen faster, and then when I really needed to take notes, I would slow it down or something like that. And I do that, but a lot of times if the narrator is very good, I don't want to speed it up. You know, I read Barbara Streisand's book. That thing is like 48 hours. It's pretty crazy, very, very long. But it was like Barbara Streisand.
She read it?
She did. And it was like she and I were having a cup of coffee.
Speed.
And I was like, no, I don't want to speed you up, Barbara. Yeah, I could get through it one and a half times faster. But I don't want to. I love that you're sitting here talking to me. Where other things, especially, I don't know what it is about some of the NLS narrators from back in the day, but I listen to the normal speed of them and I think, whoa, we got to speed you up.
I think they were actually trained as though blind people needed to hear it slower, because I see that a lot too, especially, you know, back when we were doing RFB&D and that kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh,
they were like, it was almost like they thought, okay, we have to read this book for blind people, so surely yes. we have to read it slower. Totally. No, right. no.
So, yeah. but I mean, I don't agree that people are psychopath if they read fast. I mean, I think that whatever you prefer is just what you prefer. And actually, we asked our followers on social media what their preferred listening speed is and why. And we have a few responses. Would you like to hear those?
I'd love to hear them.
Okay. Katie from Indiana said, even more than speed, though, with a human narrator, the tone is so important to me. If they're doing different voices for characters or have the natural inflection in their voice, that's great narration to me. People who are monotone or sound like they're acting instead of really getting into the character are hard for me to pay attention to at any speed. Which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. She said Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks both narrated books I listened to recently. And even though I knew their voices, they did such a good job of getting into the characters they were narrating that I just couldn't put those books down. There are a few narrators I avoid because I don't like how they read and I do text to speech instead. And, you know, that's so interesting. There was a book by somebody pretty famous and this person has read her own books, but this time she didn't. And all the reviews, because I thought the narrator was horrible, and all the reviews that I saw on Audible or most of them said the exact same thing. Why didn't you read this book yourself?
Yeah, and that when people get used to something, and comfortable change is difficult all the way. But on the flip side of that, you're absolutely right. I know people who get books from the library based on the narrator. Yes. They have their favorite narrator, and it's not even about the author or the title. They just want to get a book by that narrator.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. Caitlin, is it Caitlin? Hold on. I just skipped from Arizona. Yes, Caitlin from Arizona said, it depends on the book, but usually on Bard. For example, I start at 200, so like twice the speed.
Wow.
Generally, the only time I go lower is if the book is older and the sound quality is not as clear, or there is an extremely heavy accent, and then I might go down to 175%. Right now, I have three books going at 225%, and if it's a book I've read before or has parts that are a bit dry, I may go to 250%. Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I don't think I could do that. When I'm listening with other family members around, I will often drop to 137%. So their brains used to reading print words don't get too confused. Wow, that's fast. That's really, really fast.
For those listeners who don't know, the Bard is the Braille and audio recording download that the National Library Service provides free to blind and print disabled individuals. So if you don't know, please reach out to your local affiliate president or your local library and get more information. It's wonderful.
It is. And it's free books and lots of them, and they're getting more and more all the time. And so definitely such a great service. And lastly, we have Sarah, who said, I listen to them at the original speed. If I don't like the narrator, I delete the book. Plain
there you go.
And simple.
Yeah.
So what do you do, Anil? What's your, you already said, I sometimes go faster, but it's on Audible specifically. I usually don't. I usually find those and I usually do normal speed. It's more on the Bard downloads that I tend to go faster, but.
Mm-hmm. But I think my normal is about 1.2, 1.25 on both platforms.
Got it.
It's rare that I go, you know, below that, but I will get just a normal speed. Like when I read the Nelson Mandela autobiography that he read himself.
Oh, wow.
I came back from the South Africa trip. I just listened to him talk. Yeah. Mm.
What great books we have out there, man. We're so lucky. And to have authors that can narrate their own and to have people who can narrate at home. I mean, I'm starting to narrate books pretty soon. I should have a book up on Audible. So,
You have that vocal variety. I can see you reading books and making them interesting, especially for kids.
I really hope so. It's a young adult novel, and I'm so excited. Well, the author is blind, and I'm so excited that she gave me the opportunity And I'm also in the middle of reading one for our local library because they have a studio where they record books by Maryland authors. And there's a Maryland author that I know that recorded three kids' books. So I'm doing that. That one's been slow because that's been in my spare time and I don't always make spare time for it. So I really need to get back to it.
That's nice. But we want to make sure that everybody has, you know, you have permission to read at whatever speed that you enjoy.
Read the speed you want. Absolutely. We will never call you psycho or anything else.
and Melissa, maybe you'll get an invitation to talk about your book reading on The Breakfast Club. But full circle.
That would be cool. I'd accept it if, you know, I think I'd have to bring my, I'd have to not roll my eyes, which might be tough. My face tends to show. I have a very loud face, I've been told. Yeah. But anyway, yes, I would certainly talk.
No need to hide how you feel. No need at all. But I hope this has been entertaining and educational for you guys. Please give us feedback on the new format. If there are other news items that you want to bring to our attention for us to discuss, more than happy to delve into that. If you want to be one of our guests, you know, if you have an expertise or knowledge around something, love to have you. But until then, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.
We'd love your feedback. Email podcast@nfb.org or call 410-659-9314, extension 2444.